Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Becker on Darren Donick and Chase on this Monday morning. Hope everybody's having a good start to your week. We have the Jeff Fisher region and the Tim Corbin region open for voting as we are in the second round of our Nashville sports bracket, the best Nashville sports athletes of the last 30 years. We're down to 32 athletes, and now you can whittle the left side of the bracket down today. You've got until 9 o'clock this evening. The 2-1 seeds in these two regions are Steve McNair and David Price. The 2 seeds are Roman Yossi and Shea Weber. So we will see how that all plays out today. So go to thegamenashville.com. You can check it out on Twitter at 1025 The Game, and cast your votes. It's free. It's easy. It's a lot of fun, and we've been getting a great response from everybody. Guys, last week, Tuesday through Friday, the turnout was outstanding, and it was a lot of fun to see some of these matchups literally go down to the last hour of voting. The 8 o'clock hour at night voting to determine the winner, where we get a 51-49% victory.
The Victor Arvidsson-Derek Mason matchup literally was exactly 50-50 with 45 minutes left to go in the voting. And Victor Arvidsson pulled ahead at the last minute to do it. And the same was true pretty much. It was a little bit of a gap, but Drew Maddox pulled off the upset as a 14 seed over Jalen Ramsey, which was a big upset. And Drew, of course, has the Twitter following. That certainly helped him, but it has been fun to watch the voting for some of these matchups, and I don't doubt that there's going to be some more really tight ones here over the next few days.
No doubt there is some news. By the way, we've gone 26 days without hockey. That's just no good.
Replays have been fun, Willie. Don't get me wrong. I've been watching you guys, but it's not the same. I got that itch.
The Masters have Did you see this, the statement from their chairman?
They
have identified November 9th through the 15th as their intended dates to host this year's Masters.
And I saw some other dates. I didn't actually see the statement. But November is interesting because couldn't this be back by then, potentially?
Say that again?
But, like, they're identifying November to play the Masters, but it's going to be getting colder, and I know that there's a...
I know, that's what probably surprised me more than anything. You would think it would be a little bit earlier. I was surprised to see it November. And, oh, by the way, CBS is going to have to figure out juggling an NFL schedule on that Sunday, which would be the final day of the Masters. I believe we have Jeff Fisher on the line, so let's bring him... Former Titans head coach Jeff Fisher, he is indeed on the line with us. Jeff, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Good morning to you guys and the listeners.
Yes, let's start off by saying congratulations on the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame. Quite an honor, I know, now because of these unusual times. I'm sure I haven't heard the latest on how they're going to conduct this, when it's going to get pushed back. But nonetheless, congratulations on that honor. Well deserved.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I was caught by surprise, to say the least. You know, Coach Dave McGinnis was behind that surprise. He learned from me. So, but nonetheless, I was extremely honored, especially to keep great company. So, yeah, as a matter of fact, I 2 weeks ago when he thought, you know, within the next week to 10 days, they would have a plan with respect to when they're going to have the actual event. You know, for obvious reasons, they'll probably have to push it back a little bit.
Yeah. We had a really cool, by the way, I don't know if you're aware of kind of our Nashville sports bracket. It's keeping us halfway sane through these times, doing a 4-hour show every day. It's the best Nashville athletes in the last 30 years. You are one of our regions. We've got the Jeff Fisher region. We've got the Tim Corbin region, the Phil Bredesen region, and the David Poyle region. And in your region, Steve McNair is the one seed, and we are in the second round, currently having people vote today. We had Eddie George on last week, at the end of last week, and you're the perfect guy to ask this, Jeff, because you obviously coached in the organization, the Oilers / Titans, for a long time, but that was your first NFL job. And I want to know, because Eddie was just telling us how crazy it was, just Bellevue and, you know, trailers and the mall and Memphis and Vanderbilt, all that you went through as well. But I want to know to you, because I kind of laughed with Eddie and said, man, you're in the NFL and you played at Ohio State. You're probably there for a while going, I think I had nicer facilities and nicer stuff in college than I did in the pros. What about you as a coach, kind of the final years in Houston and the beginning stages here? What was going through your mind as an NFL head coach?
Well, you know, so much, and I appreciate you bringing it up. And Eddie's, I'll tell you what, Eddie's high school locker room was nicer than the stuff that we had when we got here, and in Houston for that matter. But, yeah, it was really different. You know, when I got to Houston, I was taken because, you know, we had a facility, and then about 5 miles away downtown, we had the coach's offices. So they had to commute every day, and you can imagine that. And so we kind of changed things around. I turned the racquetball, both racquetball courts, into coaching cubicles while we were in Houston. So we were used to, you know, the inconveniences, the daily inconveniences, but nothing, you know, compares to what we did here until we got into the facility. You know, the people, you know, everybody that worked behind the scenes to make it possible, we appreciate it. But, you know, when you have to call Critter Ritter to come out to eradicate a family of skunks that are living under the steps into your building, which is portable, I mean, it was quite an experience. I mean, at some point I was going to write a book, and maybe now that we have a little extra time on our hands, I'll venture into that. But It was quite an experience moving from here to there. And, you know, I'll never forget standing – there's so many stories, guys, but I'll never forget standing in front of the guys and telling them that, hey, look, we're finally moving. Now, Al Del Greco had deposits in schools in 3 different cities, I think, 1 Houston for his kids, 2 Nashville, and 3 Birmingham if he didn't move. And so – you know, when you tell those guys, hey, we're leaving, oh, by the way, you know, in the front door there's a pinup and it's got an 800 number of the mover, call them. You need to be there, you know, end of June because we're starting camp. And I go, well, where's camp? I go, well, we'll get back with you on that. We're not quite sure. Well, where are we playing, coach? Well, we're going to play in Memphis. Oh, cool. How far is Memphis and Nashville? How far apart? And I really didn't want to go into that at the time. But there were so many things, that so many memories that have come up over – you know, just recently. But thanks for asking. Eddie was the best. He carried the torch, as a lot of the other guys did. And it's not about size of your locker or the quality of the field or whatever it is. It's about, you know, what goes on Sundays at noon. And, you know, they understood that.
Well, you also understood, by the way, if I'm a little crackly, I'm sorry, we're going to fix the technical things on my end. I hope you can hear me all right.
I can hear you fine. Thank you.
I wanted to ask you, Jeff, the approach of coming into a brand new market. Certainly it was a little bit different dynamic than the Predators, a hockey team, because a lot of people here did not grow up with hockey. So there was a lot of teaching and learning and getting people to understand the game a little bit more. Even with no professional football here, this market knew football, but it was like the perfect storm. I thought you and Barry Trotz to introduce professional sports to this market were the perfect candidates because you guys got it. You spent time in the community. You were out there with the fans. Your players were out there with the fans and in the community. And I hope people, especially, I know there's a lot of new people here, but people that have been here a while appreciate, you know, what you guys did, because it could have been a whole lot different. You didn't have to do that. But obviously it worked out even better. It was the perfect storm because of that was going on, and you guys were good out of the gates. What went into that? Is that something that you put an emphasis on, or is that just something that kind of played out with the characters in the room?
Well, we knew that, you know, first off, as you know, prior to us physically moving here, we made numerous trips, and you spend as much time with people. Now, keep in mind, this thing wasn't a slam dunk deal here. There was a referendum here, and so we had to do, you know, our legwork, and a lot of great people were behind that. But when you come to town for the first or second time and you hear of Vince Gill doing a concert at Franklin High School, where his daughter attended, I believe, to raise money for Franklin High School football and the school itself, that kind of paves the way for you. And you understand that what's the most important here, we learned it from the music industry, what was the most important was the community. So, you know, we took their lead, and you know, I guess the best way I could describe it to you is a bus tour, a caravan in East Tennessee, that took priority. That trumped a player's workout. I mean, you know, we're scheduling caravans and things like that, and you got an assistant coach or the strength coach going, hey, wait a minute, he's got to get his lift in. No, he's not going to get his lift in. He's getting on that caravan. And, you know, can you imagine that in this day and age? But it was important to us. So, you know, we traveled all over the state and even outside the state just to raise awareness, to shake hands, to meet people, and, you know, it was the right way to do it. And then, you know, you have to, once you're in place, then it's not done. You got to continue to do that. And, you know, I did so personally with the softball games and all the other things that we did here for years. And, you know, I think it's a community and a city that can learn a lot from what, not only what we went through based on that transition, but to where they are today. I mean, I'll go back to, unfortunately, I left town a couple of days after the tornado, and then all of a sudden we're in this new environment that none of us could ever imagine. But, you know, the immediate response to East Nashville, and unfortunately that a lot of that stuff got shut down, but, you know, this place, this great city is all about taking care of each other and, you know, stripping yourself of whatever that thing is that you do, whether you're a professional athlete or not, you're somebody that's going to help. I never forget, you brought up Steve, guys. I never forget going up, I think it was Clarksville, we were doing a tornado cleanup, maybe in 98, and I look across a couple lots, they're just devastated, and there's your starting quarterback with a freaking chainsaw. I mean, that's how Steve was. I mean, Steve was outdoor woodsy guy. You know, he got that stuff. He grew up on the farm, and he knew how to do that stuff. And unlike some of the other guys that didn't know the difference between a hammer and a Phillips screwdriver, I mean, Steve got it, but that's what we did. We got out and helped.
We're talking to Coach Jeff Fisher, longtime coach of the Tennessee Titans, and, as he mentioned, the Tennessee Oilers once upon a time. But, Coach, I want to ask you about – there's so many – what we found the trends in this exercise we've done, in this bracket and the voting, a lot of the players over the last 30 years that are a little more removed from their careers haven't done as well, but the exception is your group from that 1999 to 2003 window where you guys were in it every year. And it reminds me of a lot of things you see, like the 86 Mets or Terry Crisp Broad Street Bullies of the mid-70s in Philly. They just hit a status where they're so beloved. It's a special group of guys. And I'm wondering when you sort of clued in that you had a special group, because you went from the transition time that you were talking about to all of a sudden, boom, you were kind of a national sensation.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say it was obvious, but I think once we got into that you know, the 99 season speaks for itself. The 2000 season, I thought that was our better team. And, you know, that didn't work out well for us with the loss to Baltimore. But then, you know, 01 runs around and we get a lot of people hurt. Steve got hurt. And I think it was at the end of 01, the start of 02, where we went back to championship game to where we realized that we had something, that Floyd and I and the rest of the staff had built something. And it got to give a lot of credit to Floyd. I mean, he was really good at what he did. And so we had a group of guys, but it was a perfect storm. I mean, it was the group of guys. It was the new city. It was, I mean, how much higher can you set expectations when the year you open the stadium and move into your facility, you go to the Super Bowl? So we set the expectations high, but we had guys that understood. They understood and didn't get caught up with the me things and the contract things and we need this better than that. They just went out and worked and they understood it. So, I mean, it's really cool to see, to come back over the last few years, namely the, you know, when they retired Steve and Eddie's jersey, you know, Amy invited me down and so I attended the game and stuff, and to see all those guys and to realize how many guys have stayed in town and done well for themselves here in town and just love this place. I mean, it speaks volumes of both. You know, it takes two. It's the city of Nashville, state of Tennessee, but also the kinds of players that we had in the building. And so, now, again, I reflect back. It was a great run, and we had a lot of fun.
I want to have you share stories about two guys, because I recall you talking about these two, and you, because you knew it before we all saw it in games. But I remember you telling the story as Chris Johnson was starting to hit his stride. We could see it some in the training camp and the preseason games, but you used to talk about him in practices where you weren't supposed to tackle anybody, right? So you couldn't really know. But you were saying to yourself, and you guys would all look at each other as coaches saying, you know what, I think he might have scored on that play. Nobody came close to touching him. That share that story about his first training camp.
Well, yeah, it was interesting. You know, he came in, and you know, we saw little bits and pieces of it at the, you know, the rookie mini camp, and then we got to camp, and if you guys remember, we had the Rams down to practice against. And so we practiced at our facility against the Rams for a couple of days, and then we took a day off, and then we ended up playing the Rams in the preseason game, you know, to follow that weekend. And in those practices, as everybody knows about joint practices, they're spirited, and, you know, guys get banged around a little bit and things like that. And, you know, we're watching CJ in the practices, and that, exactly what you said there, you know, well, if this was a game, do you think he scored? Because I don't think anybody could catch him. And so that happened time after time after time in that practice session. And then we get into the ball game that weekend, and I think it was his second or third carry. He goes about 60 and for a touchdown and in the preseason game. And then you knew. It's like, well, we were right or we were wrong, but either way, we like what we got here because he's just faster than everybody else on the field. So, you know, it was a lot of fun with CJ. I think if you look back at it, you know, in our, you know, our tenure or our era, everything was Eddie. And then, you know, people tend to forget that we had a run with CJ. I mean, we had a game at Kansas City where CJ and Lindell White both had 100 yards. And then we came back the next week against Cleveland here. Romeo Crennel was the head coach. And they're both over 100, and I screwed up at the end of the game because Romeo called a couple back-to-back timeouts, which he shouldn't have gotten, and the game was over, you know, and we got both over 100, and he calls timeouts, so I send goal line in there with Lindell to try to just jam it in, and we get hit for a yard loss, and Lindell ends up with 99 or 98 or something, or with been the first time since Rocky Blyer and Franco Harris where a franchise had 200-yard rushers in back-to-back games. And
wow.
So, you know, we had a lot of fun with that. And then, of course, the Seattle game and the opportunity for the record and things. But the things that we did with Vince and CJ and the option and the open side and close side option, people couldn't stop it. And so, anyway, it was just, your ability as coaches to adjust, the flexibility in things and so on. And, you know, Mike Heimerdinger was a huge part of that. And unfortunately, we lost Mike way before his time. But it was, you know, it was a lot of fun with those guys. So, you guys, you got me going. I could tell stories all day long. And I want to make this a daily thing because of where we are right now. I'm happy to help out.
Well, that is true. We do have extra time. So I did the other guy I was going to ask you about who's on the voting docket today is Javon Kearse. I'm sure it was similar with him as Chris Johnson. That as you saw him, you were like, hey, we do have something special here.
Yeah, well, let me tell you. I'll tell you the first story. So we draft Javon. We come in, and we are we're at the facility. Well, actually, we hadn't moved into the new facility yet. We were out at Bellevue. But we had this testing protocol that you do with the rookies. You know, you go out and you bench test them in the rookie minicamp, and then you do a vertical jump, and you do this kind of stuff. And so he's going station to station, and Javon, he's just been in the building for a day. I mean, nobody really knows him other than us because we interviewed him. And Javon was at the vertical jump station, and the vertical jump, for the listeners, if you guys know what they look like, it's just a vertical pole with it's got these little markers on top. They're plastic markers. So you gather, you go straight up, and you swat, and then you subtract your reach from the height, and you get your vertical jump. Anyway, I'm making the story long. So Javon kind of comes in, he's next up, and he looks up, and he says, well, what do I get if I can touch the ceiling top? And I remember, I think it was Jerry Gray, who was our secondary coach. He was manning that station. And Jerry says, dude, you're not going to touch the tile. Just jump. You're supposed to jump. Just jump. He goes, no, I'll touch the tile. He goes, no. Well, the cork or the acoustic tile that they put in that's just sitting there, that panel, is sitting there above this the vertical jump station. And Javon gathers, and he cuts it loose, and he jumps straight up in the air, and he hits that tile, and he moves it over and comes down. And that tile was 12 feet high.
Oh, my
God. So put that in perspective to the hoop.
Wow.
You know, which is 10 feet. And so we knew at that time this guy has got some explosion. But, you know, just the things that they did. I mean, Javon – you know, Javon's rookie year, you remember at Pittsburgh, and that was the millennial thing, and we thought the world was going to shut down, and we had to get up there a couple days early in Pittsburgh, and the game didn't mean anything because of the playoff scenarios, but we're going to play anyway. And Javon had that rookie sack record in mind, and I think he got it in Pittsburgh, and he came off, and he was kind of doing the little turntable, like put the record on the turntable, and because he got the rookie sack record, and then obviously he was a huge part of the win against Buffalo here, the Music City Miracle game, but also a big part in the playoff run.
We're talking to former Titans head coach Jeff Fisher here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. And Coach, we obviously have a unique situation with us because Floyd does our afternoon show, so we're able to pick his mind about different situations and the Titans and what they're faced with right now with Derrick Henry. But you obviously were in those rooms when it came to contracts and, you know, keeping players and Eddie and Chris Johnson and things like that. When you look at Derrick Henry and how important he is to this franchise and this offense, how would you go about handling his contract situation?
Well, I think it's pretty simple. You pay him. You pay him what's fair and you get him in there and, you know, whatever you want to do. I mean, I was really lucky to have Floyd there with me because my philosophy as a head coach was that I wasn't going to get in the negotiations. Basically, it ended up being, you know, we would talk. Yes, you really want him back. Yeah, I really want him back. Man, okay, we'll do what we can to get him back. And, you know, he would usually get it worked out. But from a coach's perspective, you know, it's not on either side of the spectrum. It doesn't make sense to ask a guy to take a pay cut or to get a guy to do a deal, and then you come back as a head coach and you want to ask him to play hard for you. So I stayed out of those. But Floyd, for the most part, got those things done. But back to your question, I mean, this guy, he turned this team. And, you know, I watched it closely this year. I watched the playoffs. When all this other stuff was going on out there and, you know, with Baltimore with this new offense and this and that, and they got back to freaking football basics, which was defense and run the football and go figure. You find a quarterback and all good things start to happen. Well, Derek was the guy. But I will, if I have any words of advice for them, would make sure you got a number two also. Because it's hard to do that year after year. We had a rare guy in Eddie to do it for so long. But Derek's just coming of age. And I think if in the people that I've talked to about Derek, you know, I talked to Taylor, LaJuan a little bit about him, and they love him, and he's all about work. And so I would find a way to get him done. And, you know, and then I would watch his miles, change his tires and watch the miles you put on him because he can win a lot of games for you.
You bring up getting that second back, and I look at some of the prospects that are available in the draft, and I feel like that's where you're probably going to find that guy. But obviously, Coach, we're in unique times of that you can't go through the normal evaluation process like you usually would. So, you know, as a coach, how difficult do you believe this is right now that you can't bring guys in for visits? You have to rely on tape or rely on any type of data that you got from the combine.
Well, I mean, it is a monumental task, as everything in life is right now. I don't want to minimize everything else that's going on out there. I mean, nothing is easy. And, you know, I saw something a week ago where people said, hey, you know, don't spend all your time on the positivity. You know, take a little bit of time to push the negativity away, and then the positive stuff comes. And that's why I appreciate so much about what you guys are doing, because you're talking and there's listeners at home listening to this stuff. But this stuff is going to change, and we're going to get back before we know it. I'm going to go out there when this was opening weekend of baseball, and you know I'm sitting here waiting for Tony Finau and Brent Snedeker to go into a playoff on Sunday afternoon with Tiger finishing third. And, you know, now you guys are talking about this thing going in November. But the point of it is this, is that today, under normal circumstances, in every draft room around the country, there's probably anywhere from, you know, 10 to 30 people in a draft room for a minimum of 8 hours, and then six or eight of those decision-makers are there for 14, 16, 18 hours a day doing their – and now they got to do this all remotely via Zoom and this and that. It's not an easy task. And so they'll figure it out, and they'll get it done. The league has done a great job over the years through different difficult circumstances adjusting. And the league will find out a way to do it right, and they'll figure out a way to make sure nobody gets or crosses the line from a competitive standpoint. That means eavesdropping or doing more than somebody else. You got to figure out how to do it. You got to figure out how to communicate, you know, be it between your doctors and your trainers and your scouts and your directors and your coaches. And you can imagine that task of doing that where everybody's working from home, let alone put your draft board together. And then the one thing that I'm sure that'll come up in time as you get closer is when that draft is over, guys, that I don't know how to describe it to you in words I can use on the air, but it's a crazy 3 or 4 hours when that eighth round, we call it, where you're signing all the college free agents, the undrafted players. And that is done in a room with, you know, a scout on the phone with an agent and a player and this team and that team. And it is a mess to think that they're going to do that remotely is really mind-boggling to me. But, you know, I haven't been in it. You know, I'll get in it and figure out. I'd like to, out of curiosity, figure out how they're going to do it. But, you know, the league will have it. The league will have itself ready, and it'll – it'll be competitive. It'll be fair. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether you guys on the air have talked about is there a possibility that there's not a season or there's a reduced season? I mean, those things are things that people don't want to talk about, but they're real. And those are discussions that are taking place right now. And, You know, you got a situation in the NFL and all organized sports for that matter where there's change. But as we're talking about the NFL, you know, you got a group of guys that may potentially, this year's class, may potentially just redshirt. And so hopefully it doesn't come to that. And hopefully that this thing in a few weeks, based on what we're all being told, will start to clear itself up. But, you know, there's a lot to consider. But the draft is going to go on, and it's going to be exciting. I read this morning, as you guys probably did, where, you know, ESPN and Network made partnership up to cover. So everybody at home can get the best possible coverage they can, have something to follow, and have something to look forward to.
Yeah, you make some really good points. And nobody wants to talk about it, but unfortunately we do because – it is a reality. I mean, none of us know how this is going to play out. I did want to tell you, Jeff, that we had Brant Snedeker on last week, and I know you're an avid fisherman. I know maybe he does it. I don't know exactly what he – but I don't know if you've seen, but he's been doing a lot of fishing. He told us he loves – that's kind of his thing away from the golf course. I think you're more into the fly fishing, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's just I've been a fly fisherman all my life and been very fortunate the last couple of years to have done a lot of different types of fly fishing, a lot of really cool places. But that's the thing. I mean, I was in Montana. You know, I came down a couple of weeks ago here back to town for personal reasons, and I'm a new grandpa once again, which is
congratulations.
Cool. All good reasons, but I was up there, and you know, that's what you know. You talk about social distancing. As long as you're a couple hundred yards away from somebody else on the river. Now, the rivers are still, you know, they're still thawing out and things, but a lot of people in boats floating, and, you know, that's one thing, you know, that people can do. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm fortunate I'm heading out to the farm now, and, you know, I got the fish are biting, so I'll have to track Brant down and get him out there, and I might bring out my wedge and teach him how to fly fish, and he can teach me how to chip.
That sounds like a good day, actually.
Sounds like a good trade.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. Hey, thanks for doing this. Go enjoy your day. Be safe. Congrats on, as you mentioned, you're a granddad again, so congrats on that. And we'd love to check back in a little bit later down the road, so thanks for doing this.
Hey, just holler at me, guys, if you want to talk about something. You know, I'm happy to do so. I've been through just about everything there is. I mean, I even sat in the competition committee, and we were talking about how the league was potentially going to handle the H1N1 thing and how to make sure that the teams were competitive. Now, that pales in comparison to what we're doing now, but happy to be on anytime, and my best to all the listeners. And hang in there, man. Don't dwell on the negativity stuff. Get rid of it. Push it out of your life. And before we know it, you know, we'll be watching all kinds of fun things. Can you imagine seeing a ball go through the air and somebody running underneath it, catching it? It'd
be pretty fun.
That gets people really excited, just having that visual.
Just realize how lucky we are and
yep.
All that stuff we took for granted, man. So anyway, get out and enjoy the great weather and be safe. Thanks
no
for
doubt.
The opportunity.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
That is former Titans head coach Jeff Fisher. Good stuff from him. We will step away and come back and close up shop on hour number one of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.